This is Barry Took with a warm welcome to a second portion of the choicest news quiz morsels from 1995. It's often said of the news quiz that we just sit about lampooning our politicians and making cheap, offensive remarks about them. Another good way of getting our audience ratings up is to demonstrate how our statesmen often seem to take the mic or themselves, as Andy Hamilton and Jeremy Hardy demonstrated with Messrs. Howard and Portillo. Andy, you get the first question. You'll be surprised what it's about. Who is not operational as a matter of policy?
Well, I'd like to tell you about this dream that I had, actually, last night. It was terrifyingly realistic. I was running down this alleyway, and I was being pursued by this huge, shadowy figure, sort of monster. And I could feel its breath on my neck, and I could see the sort of profile of its claws against the night sky. And it was terribly, terribly frightening, because, like, one of those dreams is very, very real, you know, and you really believe you're there. And it was awfully scary. And then as I was running away from this awful monster, my heart was pounding. And then I turned a corner, and Michael Howard stepped out in front of me and said, "I resign." And I was so relieved, because then I knew it was a dream.
Jeremy, who picked a fight with those he wouldn't fight for?
This is Polly Portillo, isn't it? It has been the Conservative Party conference, and there is a popular myth about the Conservative Party, which is the idea that one or two of them are quite nice people. And in order to dispel this misconception, every year hundreds of them, drooling, gagging, xenophobic loopers, clutching slightly soiled copies of the Daily Mail, gather together and bounce up and down as one piece of malevolent idiocy after another appears on the stage. We had your man from Ireland, Mawinney, trying to rile them against Asian women till it turned out it was a charity sponsored by the... What's her name?
Princess Royal.
Princess Royal, Princess Anne. And we had Heseltine telling them a joke from 20 years ago, and they laughed uproariously because they just got it. We had Polly Portillo telling us that the world is frightened of us because we're really hard, because we've got the SAS, in spite of the fact that in the rest of the world, the SAS is the Swedish airline. We're really tough because we've got the SAS, who are marvellous at unarmed combat, which means shooting people who are unarmed. But there's a book coming out saying that he was actually quite a nice boy. He was quite left-wing, came from a good family, father in the Spanish Civil War. And you wonder, a boy like that, a nice lad, what chain of appalling circumstances happens to somebody that they turn into the monster we now see today?
I see nothing to object to in that. Alan here, to your great surprise, is a piece of music.
And although this is a fight I can lose, the accused is an enemy.
I think we tread softly here, Alan. That was An Innocent Man by Billy Joel. And the question is he an innocent man?
Well, it's very difficult to answer because he is innocent as a result of having 400 lawyers at £3 million each. I have nothing. I have a small solicitor in Winchmore Hill who will be wiped out by people like that, so I shall take it very carefully. I think this refers to... at a guess, this refers to have-a-go hero O.J. Simpson. who, as of tonight, has pledged himself to finding the man who killed his wife and her friend, Mr. Goldman. This will be a lifetime's search for him, and enormously difficult, involving waking up every morning, looking in the shaving mirror and thinking, that bloke's got funny eyes. I won't go on, but whether this is progress in American jurisprudence, I really don't know. But this man was declared innocent.
Was the trial of O.J. Simpson, which took over a year to present evidence and just 4 hours to find the defendant not poor.
Former footballer and actor is set to make millions from his acquittal, including the film of the trial called 12 Friendly Men. We start round three with a listing from the Hampstead and Highgate Express.
6:10, Pride and Prejudice. Mr. Bennett's estranged cousin, Mr. Collins, writes to announce his imminent visit to Longbourn, the house he will inherit on Mr. Bennett's death. Mrs. Bennett rallies the residents to stop him setting up a minicab service.
Francis, who supported a bombe surprise fait accompli?
Is this anything to do with Monsieur Chirac?
It is.
He came over here this week.
He did.
Well, he claimed to be Chirac. It was probably some hoax or other. to have a meeting with Major, and it's very odd, because only about 3 or 4 weeks ago, Michael Portillo made that speech to the Tory conference saying, Britain stands alone, we fight alone against the Hun and the Frog and all the rest of it. Right. And then over comes Monsieur Chirac to sign a new defence cooperation deal with John Major. And I noticed the defence secretary, Michael Portillo, was nowhere to be seen in any of the photographs I saw. Maybe lurking at the back with a berm. But he made himself pretty scarce. But anyway, it was all lovey-dovey. And Chirac actually called John Major Mon cher Jean. I thought it was a bit frisky of him. Before old Major had to go off and look it up in his Collins gem.
I'm not sure Michael Portillo comes out in photographs, does he?
Let's break the tension with a piece of music. It's good news week. Someone's dropped a bomb somewhere, contaminating atmosphere and blackening the sky. It's good news week. There you are. It's Good News Week by Hedgehoppers Anonymous. And the question is, what French test failed to impress? That's a difficult one,
yes.
Isn't it?
This is Jacques Chirac's remake of South Pacific. As if you remember South Pacific, there was a big fat frog in it, wasn't he? It was a bloke who sang a psalm chanted the evening. You can blow up a stranger. Anyway, that's what they've been doing. And even as we speak, Tahiti is being unseamed and taken to pieces by the Tahitians who want independence from France. But France has just developed a bomb to stop them having it.
You see the report from the French Defence Ministry on the successful test. It said that confirms that, yes, it was a bomb. It made a big bang, and if dropped in a housing estate, could be very dangerous.
That's
all they learned from it.
The bomb they set off is as big as the bomb they set, you know, the Americans set off in Hiroshima, and Mura Atoll has now surrendered in the Second World War.
They're funny people. Yeah. They can cook.
It seems odd that our very own Prime Minister refused point blank to condemn those French nuclear tests with their potential effects on the environment, particularly since he proved this year to be an ardent animal lover. But when Mr. Major revealed how he saved the life of an ailing fish but had trouble controlling a frisky tomcat, you can't help but feel he might have started taking his work home with him.
You know, everyone knows probably the story about the goldfish in John Major's pond in his home in Huntingdon, which was rescued and he layered it with zinc cream to save it from sunburn, and then told the story on VJ Day, the most solemn moment, to Tony Blair and Paddy Ashton, and they all burst out laughing. But I thought it was actually like a parable for our times, in which the goldfish was like Britain. And the first sign of sun, we all go critical. John Major leaps in to save us, and we end up coated in zinc cream. Do you think that's a vision of Britain today?
That's quite poetic.
You can't see Gladstone doing it, really, can you?
I think, in a
misguided attempt to catch the guppy vote, or whatever it was.
I mean, here is
a Western leader of sorts, with his trousers rolled up, standing in a suburban pond, claiming... He put zinc ointment on. Have you ever tried to hold a goldfish for long enough to put zinc ointment on it? Do you imagine what the neighbours thought when they looked Dunroman looked over the fence and said, it's the Prime Minister of England. What's he doing, beloved? He's got a goldfish and he's putting zinc ointment. Oh, very good. How's the economy? Oh, it's doing all right, really, one way or another. Come inside in a minute and try to worm the frog.
Who used one of his nine to get back to ten?
I don't have the faintest idea.
I was on this programme, I got all the animal questions. Now I get all the John Major questions, because all the John Major questions are animal questions. This is the same as a goldfish one. A couple of weeks ago, there was John Major putting KY jelly on a goldfish for some reason. And his cat heard about this. And the cat said, I'm not staying with people like this. And it threw a few things into a suitcase and cleared off. Then, according to the Times, which is my newspaper and a newspaper of record, the cat died. The next day, the Times was proved to have been slightly premature because the cat wasn't dead at all. It had turned up at somebody else's place with its suitcase, hung its hat up, and tucked in. And the fact is that the Major's food is not very good. There's something wrong with this cat's kidney. It's called Humphrey. And its kidneys are a bit dodgy, so they put it on a low-protein diet rather than the Helmut Kohl diet. The cat heard about Helmut Kohl and probably turned up at the German embassy. I'd like one of those knackwurst, please, with a genetically engineered tomato on the side. Because they won't let me eat the goldfish because he's covered them in Vaseline. And the people seeing the picture of this cat in the Times, it looks like 4 million cats. I do not believe it's the same cat, but it's a black and white cat. And they've given it back to Major, you'll believe anything. Having collared the goldfish guppy vote a couple of weeks ago, he's now got the cat vote. General election day, there'll be a lot of goldfish and cats queuing up at booths. Only people he's got.
Pets are getting bigger and bigger, aren't they? You know, first it's factor 15 in the goldfish, isn't it? And then and his cat appears, and then next it'll be, you know, John Major rescues giraffes.
He left at the same time as the Tory leadership election, I think, about 3 months ago, Humphrey.
Because he wasn't elected.
Just at the same time as John Redwood was standing for leader of the Conservative Party. So I think it was just a precautionary measure. Because you would have to look at him to see he's a cat strangler, don't you? He just has that. He has those eyes.
You wouldn't want to eat a curry that John Redwood had made, would you?
Here's a cutting from the Swinton Advertiser.
A naked flasher is jumping out of bushes and exposing himself, say Worsley Police. PC Andy Holden said because the weather is particularly nice at the moment, this man sees it as the ideal opportunity. We tend to get people exposing themselves more in the summer. In the winter, it tends to drop off.
And I'd like to see anyone get a double meaning out of that. What sporting home tie has gone to extra time?
What sporting home tie has gone to extra time?
Oh, my God, your hearing's good.
Look, it's Manchester bloody Wembley.
Oh, thank you, Ruth. Manchester bloody Wembley. You think that's a clue, do you?
Not. It's a bloody answer, you fool.
You think if you say that, I'll say the people who were deciding on the National Stadium haven't yet decided whether it should go to Wembley or whether it should go to Manchester.
That's what I was expecting.
You thought I'd say that, yes, if you gave me the clue. Well, I'm not going to. Oh. You should have gone to Sheffield, you know.
Of course it should. Yes.
So I speak at a Birmingham MP.
Sheffield made such a success of the student games a few years ago that I can't think why they were left off the shortlist.
We made success of them. England won. When did England last win anything? Yep. Sheffield arranged that.
They did. How many million pounds did it cost? I can't remember.
Well, that just shows what a patriot you are, Ween. How many million pounds you're prepared to spend for England just to win something in Sheffield? We're real patriots.
A bronze medal in the synchronised swimming at the Sheffield Student Games of 1980 something or other.
Oh, be fair.
Who could forget it?
A silver medal in the synchronised swimming. Ladies synchronised swimming.
Not the mixed synchronised swimming, because all hell breaks
loose. We don't have
that
sort of dirty talk in Sheffield.
It's more fun than you'd think, isn't it, really?
It's the way I pretend not to know the answers, you know.
No, I know.
It's years of parliamentary training.
Of course it is. Jeremy, you've been jolly helpful up to now.
Thank you, love.
Here's a piece of music for you. Did you smile when you took them on? You didn't take a peep in their artillery room. All that run, people's hairs on your chest. What shots have you got? It's a tie and a crest. Come on! lyrics you get these days. It was the Eton Rifles by The Jam. The question is, who pressed for no rifling around Eton?
Wills, who is future King Prince William, is being sent to Eton. He's being sent to boarding school. I don't know much about that because I wasn't sent to boarding school because my parents actually quite liked me, really. it's very interesting because the police are worried about him and he's going to be tagged. He's going to have an electronic tag on his wrist so his parents will know what his wrist is doing at all times. Lord Wakeham is chairman of the Press Complaints Commission. I don't know, he must have privatised it when he was a minister, I suppose. And he says that he must be left alone by the paparazzi, Prince William. And he said, what's good for a young child in Accrington is good for a child at Eton, which is true, because Prince William will grow up with no job and nothing useful to contribute to society. Or he'll just end up joining the army for something to do.
At the time we covered that story, tagging royal princes to keep them under control seemed quite daft. But after that infamous Panorama interview, the palace might well have given serious thought to tagging the mother as well. However, it wasn't only the British head of state who fretted about a Wales problem, as the first of our even dafter snippets demonstrate.
I'm a Yankee doodle dandy, a Yankee doodle doodle die. A real life baby for my Uncle Sam, born on the 4th of July. I met a Yankee doodle sea.
Well, that was, of course, a bit surprised to know Yankee Doodle by a Welsh male voice choir. And your question is, what presidential gaffe led to Wales of protests?
Yes, well, now, you've got to be thinking that you know when an American president is really, really in trouble when he starts to worry about the Welsh vote. I mean, the Irish vote, fair enough, you know, the Korean vote, the African-American vote, but I have never been aware of a substantial Welsh vote in the United States. But this is what Clinton has fallen foul of, the Welsh contingent, because he used the phrase to Welsh, as in to Welsh on a debt. Now, I didn't know that this had any connection with Wales at all, this phrase. But apparently, no, this is in politically correct America. This has been taken as a slight on Wales, and all sorts of hideous things have been threatened. Shirley Bassey's going to boycott Las Vegas. And Tom Jones is pulling out even now, so...
here's your question. Where might you enjoy a gaily arresting weekend?
This is South Yorkshire Water Authority, isn't it? I mean, it was their police force, but exactly the same as the Water Authority. South Yorkshire policemen are being billeted on homosexual couples. I suppose billeted is the word. I don't know what the... Well, anyway, they're being put into close troilistic enclave with homosexual couples to teach them to be better policemen.
How did they do that? I mean...
I don't know. They probably use that new truncheon. I don't know. I've never known. I don't believe it happens, actually. I'm rather like Queen Victoria. I don't think grown men get up to that sort of thing. But anyway, they're plucking these policemen from the streets and they're putting them into cottages. and this will help them to understand. I that's all there is. I didn't read any further. I came over all of a doodah, really. And my friend had to mop me down.
Cynics suggest that they could be targeting all the gays in South Yorkshire, the better to raid them when the next trouble starts.
Well, I like that. That's all right. Maybe it'd come out like that. No, it's a serious story. Can't see Jack Warner doing it. Fine, there you go.
Evening all.
Evening all.
Mind where you go. Yeah.
No one likes a bent copper.
Well,
here's a cutting from the big issue sent in by Cathy Trodd of Cornwall.
Employees of a Nairobi bank were recently confronted by a man with a sack of coconuts. Jesus Watambi burst through the door, cried, "I never miss," and launched a coconut at a customer, hitting him on the head. Two more nuts were launched at cashiers before Mr. Watambi ordered staff to hand over their money. The sum of £3,000 was handed over, and Mr. Watambi ran into the street, where, unfortunately, he was run over by a passing lorry. It's funny, said the driver. Last week, I hit a man carrying a bag of mangoes.
Tony, what slim chance is all in the head?
It's a story about dieting, all being in the head. Yes. I think it's people at an Oxford hospital. They did some research on mice about dieting, which seems to me a bit of a mistake, really, because I've never seen an overweight mouse. They keep themselves nicely in trim, don't they, really? But a little bit of jogging when we're not looking. And so, but they did the research on them, and they've discovered that in our brains there's this chemical called serotonin. And what this does, this regulates the appetite. So if you diet, the problem is you produce less serotonin, and then the next time you eat, you actually need to eat more to make up for this lack of serotonin. So if you diet, you actually then need to eat more, and then you get fat and you think, I better diet a bit more, and then you eat even more. And it's just this dreadful spiralling situation. So I can only infer from this that the only logical, realistic way to lose weight is to take your own life. Which, it's drastic. But anyone interested in buying copies of my book, Diet Without a T, copies are on sale afterwards. Yeah.
Alan, what didn't arrive okay?
Are you referring to the Senna Sea Link Challenge?
Senna?
Yes, the
Senna pod.
It's a semi-cross channel ferry. It's impossible, really, to open a newspaper these days without finding something that's supposed to travel to France. Actually, not getting there. And I'm convinced this is government policy about Europe, especially having a Malcolm Rifkin speech on Thursday, just saying, yes, we're actually totally, fully, absolutely committed. But let's not go the whole hog and let's not rush things. I think this means that when you get in a train at Ashford, it stops halfway underneath the channel. And when you get on one of these ferries, it doesn't actually get... I mean, I can sort of see it on the bridge on the night in question. It's Anthony Steele and Jack Hawkins, isn't it? And...
a cup of cocoa, number two.
There are a couple of miles off France. And the first mate says, shall I just slip it into Calais Harbour, Captain? And he turns to him and he says, that's just what they'll be expecting. Why don't you stick it on the beach? Having stuck it on the beach, as we saw from the papers the next day, what happened but that every Englishman on board ran to the prow of the ship and unfurled the Union Jack over the front of it?
That wasn't the last Alan Corran had to say on that subject, but to make a change from teasing people in the news, he turned his attention to someone who reads it.
Well, I have to say, Barry, that in 20 years of carrying on this farrago, I've never had a more embarrassing or indeed ungallant quotation. We have to return to the Stena Sea Link. And on Tuesday on Radio 4, I turned it on and I heard our own Charlotte Green telling me that 450 passengers had been trapped aboard a cross flannel cherry. Forgive me.
What's that colour called that Charlotte's gone there?
It's called Cherry. Yeah.
And with that cruel focus on the long-suffering Charlotte Green, I'll say goodbye from this year's crop of News Quiz oddities with a selection of the cuttings from our panellists. Not forgetting the many people who sent us amazing gems from local newspapers. Thank you all. Keep it up in 96. Goodbye, and a happy new year to you all.
And this is from the Newbury Weekly News, and it's a report of a meeting of Berkshire County Council's Planning and Waste Committee to discuss how to persuade people to return their packaging for recycling. Mrs. Elizabeth Still, Conservative, Bradfield, said, if I take a carton of champagne, for example, what do I do with the carton? That is the sort of thing that the ordinary citizen will be asking.
Steve, what have you got for us?
Yes, this is from the Lichfield and Tamworth Express, but it takes place in Germany, so I don't know quite what it's doing in the Lichfield and Tamworth Express. But a deaf robber is suing a German bank he tried to hold up after accusing them of exploiting his disability. Klaus Schmidt was caught and arrested when he failed to hear the alarms which were set off by the phone. Schmidt, aged 41, had burst into the Berlin bank armed with a pistol and screamed, "Hand over the money." Terrified staff asked if he wanted a bag, to which he replied, "Damn right, it is a real gun." The bank manager then realised he was deaf and set off the alarm.
Simon.
This is from a magazine called The Weekly. A Brazilian from Recife is being sued by his surgeon. He is refusing to pay for a mechanical penis implant because it operates every time neighbours use their TV remote control. I always wonder what that little button on the top right was for.
Nick, what have you brought for us?
My thanks to Mary Macon, who's found in the Globe and Mail from Toronto the following story about the French nuclear tests, and it quotes a New Zealander. I'm going to do this without... I don't want any sort of nasty remarks about my accent. "They should bloody do it in their own backyard," said Neville Carter, a 46-year-old New Zealand builder waiting to go to work, "under the Eiffel Tower. They haven't won a war in their bloody history, just relied on everyone else. I'll never buy anything French again, never. My wife's French, I don't even talk to her now."
Andy.
This is a slightly longer cutting, but it's a beautiful visual picture from The Pilot magazine. Bored RAF pilots stationed at the Falkland Islands have devised what they consider a marvellous new game. Noting the local penguins are fascinated by airplanes, the pilots search out a beach where the birds are gathered and then fly slowly along the water's edge. Perhaps 10,000 penguins turn their heads in unison watching the planes go by. When the pilots turn around and fly back, the birds turn their heads in the opposite direction, like spectators at a slow-motion tennis match. Then, pilots fly out to sea and return directly towards the penguin colony and overfly it. Heads go up, 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 and then 10,000 penguins fall over gently onto their backs.
Thank you, Andy. Alan.
I've got a cutting from the Leamington Spa Courier.
Have you?
It says a Warwick motorist who drove into a police car travelling in the opposite direction told magistrates at Leamington last Friday that he had decided to risk driving home with only one contact lens in. The other one had fallen out in the pub and he'd been unable to find it. He had come to the conclusion that it had fallen into his beer and been swallowed, which was why he had subsequently refused to give a urine sample in case he did himself some damage.
Part two of the 1995 News Quiz of the Year was presented by your chairman, Barry Took. Taking part were Alan Corran, Francis Wheen, Andy Hamilton, Jeremy Hardy, Clive Anderson, Nick Clark, Martin Young, Roy Hattersley MP, Steve Punt, Tony Hawkes, Simon Hoggart, Vincent Hanna, and Germaine Greer. The news was read by Charlotte Green, Brian Perkins, and me, Peter Donaldson. The links were written by Ian Pattinson and Robert Fraser Steele. The producer was Alid Evans.